Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And I am honored to introduce my next guest. And her mom and dad, her mom, I've been able to see and talk to, you know, recently, and just a beautiful, beautiful woman, and her dad, who made a lasting impact on my life. And going back to a time when I was a very young boy and the civil rights struggle that was taking place that helped shape who I am today. Father James Groppi is a legend in the city of Milwaukee and was nationally acclaimed, and got to sit down with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and talk with him and sup with him and fight injustice. Any man who had the opportunity to break bread with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was a bright man and a lucky man, and that's who Dr. James Groppi was. And I am honored beyond words to have his lovely daughter on the line, Miss Christine Groppi. Hey, good morning to you, young lady. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Thanks for having me on your show.
I am honored to have the seed of a man who was fearless. Your dad was a fearless man. I know you know his history, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks a lot for just those kind words about my parents.
Well, your parents, to stand before injustice and mm-hmm. and not be concerned about what was a dangerous, dangerous time when your mom and dad were doing the things that they were doing. It was a dangerous, dangerous time in this city. And yet your father stood before all of that because he was a man who believed in justice. He believed in righteousness. It's one thing to be a religious person and talk that, but it's another thing altogether to live it. And that's what your dad did. Let's talk a little bit about Christine Groppi. I mean, how do you follow parents like that? What are you doing?
Well, I mean, for sure, it's not easy. I mean, you know, I would say that, like, from a young age, they gave us what I would call an anti-racist upbringing. I mean, they didn't use that vocabulary in those days, but that's what it was.
Right.
So, you know, we were presented from an early age with a world that was integrated. You know, my parents had an integrated group of friends. We went to integrated schools. We lived in an integrated neighborhood. And so, like, those values were present in our lives from, you know, as long as I can remember. As far as activism, like, I would say that I was kind of a sporadic activist, like, in high school and college, and then, you know, getting more involved in activism in 2020, with the People's Revolution of Milwaukee. So after the killing of George Floyd and the issue of police brutality kind of, you know, took center stage. There were a lot of demonstrations, and it kind of just ended up being the same people showing up every day and, right. You know, getting to know each other and forming those friendships and also those working relationships and then forming a group. I protested with the People's Revolution for really 2020 and 2021, a little bit in 2022. And that is kind of, that's been the bulk of my activism. And, you know, like that, the story of the open housing marches and the activism in the 60s, that was really a source of inspiration and strength for a lot of people in TPR. And so I really felt like that connection. you know, and I just, you know, try to do my best to like be a person who can look at themselves in the mirror in the morning and not, you know, feel ashamed that, you know, I'm sitting back and letting other people do the work. So yeah, I've made an effort to do my best to follow their example, but, you know, doing so very imperfectly.
You know, your dad was a Catholic priest. Mm-hmm. And at a time in those turbulent 60s, mm-hmm. there weren't a lot of other Catholic priests who did what he did. He was one of a kind. And he lived his faith. And so there are a lot of Catholic priests around at that point in time, but he was the one who was able to, and I don't even use the term buck his belief, mm-hmm. but he was a man who, even in the face of all of that ridicule that he was faced with, mm-hmm. Was fighting for what was right. And it's one thing to even say, I'm going to walk with that group of people. He led it, mm-hmm. which was altogether a different dynamic. And I would say to you, when you talked about the work, doing the work, there are people who don't think there's any work that needs to be done. You know, we're still living at a time that there are people who think that things are equal and fair and just, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's not the case. It's not.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's part of the importance of, you know, learning about Black history, you know, not only learning about it as things that happened in the past, but, you know, how does racism look in our current context? You know, because we know that these things don't go away. What they do is change form. So, you know, as an educator teaching kids, like, okay, how can we recognize this in our current surroundings? How does it exist in our city now? How does it exist in our school? How does it exist in our lives? You know, not always framing it as something that happened in the past.
So you're an educator. What are your thoughts about people who say, well, we don't want CRT taught to students, and we don't want that history being taught to our children because it makes our children feel bad? You happen to teach in an urban school mm-hmm. district. So, do you think people on the other side of that, when they say we don't want our children to feel bad, do you think they ever think about the other side of that, the children in the urban school districts, how they feel about that?
You know, I really don't think that I don't think that they do. You know, and if you don't learn about Black history, you're really missing out. I mean, there's no aspect of our culture or history that's not been touched by race or racism. And you're really missing out on a better understanding of history in general. And then also a better understanding of justice movements in general. And, you know, if you understand the civil rights movement, that will help you to understand other justice movements and just, you know, thinking about the kind of world that we want to build.
You know, when you're around those young children that you're around, and those young children deserve to know the truth. All of us mm-hmm. deserve to know the truth about our nation. And anybody who wants to, you know, bury that truth really should, you know, be dismissed. I don't think anybody who thinks that Ron DeSantis and people of his ilk and others who think that we need to, all the books that are written, we need to go through the books and determine what won't hurt our children about the history of our nation is doing a disservice to all of us. And mm-hmm. we can never, ever look at our nation as a nation that is deserving of the title of, you know, one of the greatest nations on earth if we're not willing to deal with the facts of what created this nation and made it what it is.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, for sure.
You know, This, how old were you? Because you look very young now. You were very young with your dad, right? I mean, you had to be.
He passed away when I was five.
Yeah, it had to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do have memories of him. So I feel lucky to have those.
Yeah, you know, he, even to this day, when you hear the name Father Grappi, right? You know, there are many of us who live this life, and we'll leave the planet, and once we're gone, the only people who will ever remember us will be our loved ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's only a handful who live on, whose legacy will live on. Your dad is one of those people. Here it is, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still talking about your dad. Those of us who knew, right? And his legacy should never be forgotten. I know as long as men like me and my generation who knew what he did, we're never going to let his legacy die. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, I'm so honored to have on the line Miss Christine Grappi. She is the daughter of the legendary James Grappi. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Miss Christine Grappi. And she, how's your mom doing?
She's doing really good. She's doing really good. You know, she stays busy. She was a Wisconsin State Poet Laureate for 2 years. She has a few books of poetry published. So you can always find her like working on writing projects or reading poems somewhere. And that's sort of how her activism sort of manifesting through writing, which I think is great.
You know, I had her in the studio. I don't know. I think it might have been a couple of years ago now. That's right, COVID. So, and she is just as wonderful a person as she was way back then. And, you know, you look just like her.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you know. So let's talk about, you know, why, you know, this that point in time. And, again, you were a very young girl at that point in time, and the impact of it. I think most of the people in this listening audience don't know about what took place, what transpired during those days and times in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee was the Selma of the North. And, you know, you read the history about what happened down in Selma, Alabama, but Milwaukee certainly wasn't far behind with its bigotry and its racism.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that we became Selma of the North because of Mayor Meyer saying, this isn't Selma, Alabama.
Right.
we have a lot of lovely people here or something, you know, we have lovely race relations here. But so ironically, yes, we are Selma of the North.
Oh, we were at that time anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And some would say, I mean, still, we're still right. One of the most segregated cities in the country.
So, and it truly is the case. And when you have these kinds of conversations, people, it bothers people to have these kinds of conversations. And there are people who will not admit it. But I always try to get people to understand it's not right. It wasn't right then. It's not right now. Mm-hmm. And this battle still goes on.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know,
yeah.
it still goes on. And I was saying that, you know, it's not going to change. It didn't change in my father's lifetime. He died at 94. It didn't change in his father's lifetime. It's not going to change in my lifetime. And it's not going to change in my son's lifetimes. But you've got to, the battle has to go on. And injustice is wrong, whether it's in America, whether it's in Russia, whether it's in China. But we can't point the finger at the injustice of other nations, you know, Christine, and not face the injustice in our own, right?
Right, right. Agree, for sure. Yeah. You know, a lot of people have very critical things to say about other countries, but, you know, what do they say when those same injustices exist here, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it's, you know, if you don't know, and there are just people who I think clearly don't know because they're so separated from things and isolated. And so when you began to be a part of what happened with George Floyd, and there were people who were angry that you guys were marching and doing what you were doing as if you had somehow done something wrong. When what you were doing was what our nation claims to be and what separates us from other nations, and that's that you have the right to protest, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't say that that's what we have and that's what separates our country. And then when people protest, there are people who say, hey, you got no business out there doing that.
Right. Or you're disturbing the peace or, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that.
Well, you didn't have to say anything. You were out there standing up and fighting and doing what your father would have done and what your mother would have done. And so you can't have parents like yours and ignore what's right and what's wrong. And so it's pretty clear that you're following in those same footsteps.
Well, you know, I'm trying to and probably doing so, you know, to the best of my ability. But it's a hard life. You know, the activist life is a hard life.
Listen, I want to thank you. I know you got to get back to class.
Yeah.
Thank you
for
taking the time. Sure. I'll be reaching out to you, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
We'll talk at another time. All right, Christina Grappi. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Woo!
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And my guest is Sarah
Geenan.
She is a candidate for the Court of Appeals in District 1. Good evening. Oh. Good morning to you. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
All right. Well, we've been trying to get you on for a little while.
We have.
And thankfully, we've finally been able to get that done. Let's talk about who Sarah Geenan is.
Absolutely. And thank you for having me. I am a labor lawyer in Milwaukee. I've been there for 16 years. I represent workers. I represent unions. And I've been really privileged and honored to stand next to
I'm a union guy. Anybody who's supporting unions, go ahead.
Well, I've been really privileged and honored to have the opportunity to make a career out of standing next to workers, standing with workers, fighting to make their workplaces better and safer, finding ways to have a voice on the job and make sure everyone comes home safely at the end of the day is really what it comes down to.
Yeah. So you got a family?
I've got a family. I've got three boys. They are.
Wow.
Wow is right some days. I think this morning there was a wrestling match on my way out of the house. We've got birthdays coming up, so it's very important to note that my oldest is almost 13 in 2 days. Then we've got a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old.
And with all of that, you still find a way to do a little coaching?
I do. So we live on the east side of Milwaukee. My kids go to MPS schools. But even before they came along, as soon as I moved to Milwaukee, and even during law school, I started coaching basketball. When I moved to Milwaukee, the first coaching experience I had was at Bethune Academy on 35th and Walnut.
Yeah, yeah.
It was quite the experience.
So let me ask you. So when you make a decision that with three sons, growing sons, and that you're going to, you know, branch out and become, run for this judgeship. What was it that made you make this decision?
Well, it's been a lot of things over the years. I mean, as I said, my career has been in representing working folks, and it's been, I grew up in union halls. My dad was a labor guy too, active in his union. So I've always seen the importance of people being able to work together to make a difference, to improve their communities, to have a voice. And in my entire career as a labor lawyer, we've seen that voice restricted, whether it was through, Act 10, gerrymandering, things that legislation that made a difference that was being propounded so that some interests, corporate interests, had a bigger voice than you or I. And it became important to me to make sure that we don't allow those interests to seep into our judiciary any further, and that we have a bench in Milwaukee County, which is District 1, that reflects our values and when it's considering the cases before it, so that everybody gets a fair shake.
You know, what's so frustrating to me, Ms. Geenan, is the fact that we are led to believe that justice is supposed to be blind, right? That's what we hear constantly. And since we're just citizens, we don't know the inner workings, and we believe that the people who sit in robes, some of us, are going to be just in the decisions that they make. And then when you've lived as long as I have, you realize that that's not always the case. And the more you see that injustice on the benches, the more it's hard to believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all of those things. Am I far off base?
I think you're raising a really valid point. Our courts are not transparent. There is not a lot of transparency in the decisions in the process and how it works, and it certainly leads to the very things that you're raising as concerns.
You know, you're not supposed to be biased at all, but I remember when Scott Walker was the governor, Scott Walker appointed a lot of different judges to different districts and other places, and the people that he appointed clearly were loyal to him and to the Republican Party more so than they were to following what justice and all that is supposed to be about.
I think that's a real concern. You know, I got into law because I believe in justice. I believe in equality. I believe in equality under the law for everybody. And I don't know, and I've got real concerns about making sure that we protect that going forward, which is why I'm running against a judge who was, in fact, appointed by Scott Walker.
You know, I know, you kind of even hear it now, even on a national level, you hear, well, you know, the Republicans, when Donald Trump was the president, he appointed all these justices that were right-leaning. And you hear the verbiage, right-leaning. And I'm like, you know, listen, I'm just an average guy. But anytime we can have that kind of verbiage, and even if that was the case, you certainly shouldn't be saying that in a bold and open, you know, manner.
Right.
Because it, again, leads people to believe that our justice system is unfair. And with the three branches of government, the one that we should be able, stop me if I'm saying something.
You're absolutely right. The one that the judiciary is meant to be the balance. It's meant to be the nonpartisan branch. It's meant to be the key to upholding our democracy by applying the laws as they're written and as they were intended.
So let's talk about what courts of appeals do, what their role and responsibility is.
Absolutely. Courts of appeal fly under the radar. They're probably the least exciting of the courts. We hear an awful lot about the Supreme Court, and we sure are going to hear a lot for the next 5 weeks.
Right.
And then we hear about trial courts. Every county in the state of Wisconsin has its own trial courts or circuit court system. With the circuit courts are the trial courts, so they have that's where the action is. Whether it's criminal or civil case about business, that's where you've got the juries, you've got the evidence, things like that. Once the trial court judge or the jury gives a decision, if someone believes that decision is wrong, or that they didn't have their rights honored, they've got the ability to appeal, and that goes to the courts of appeal. Any decision that's a final decision can be appealed to the courts of appeal. The courts of appeal in Wisconsin are divided into four districts. Milwaukee County is District 1. That's the district I'm running in, and that is its own district. The other districts are districts, the northern part of the state, and then the southwest part of the state out of Dane County, and the rest of the southeastern part of the state out of Waukesha.
So who determines what appeals are heard?
Sure. The courts of appeal has to hear any appeal that's sent to it or that it gets, although they are districted. So there's some, based out of which district the appeal arises, unless there's a certain rule that came into play during the Walker administration. So any lawsuit against the state for an agency action or a against legislature, once it starts in Dane County, it gets kicked out to one of the other districts. And all of those districts tend to be more conservative.
So they work similarly to the Supreme Court. More than one person takes a look at these different cases and then determines this is one that we're going to take on?
Right. There's a panel of three judges that hears most of the cases. There are four judges in the Milwaukee district. There's five in Dane County, I believe, and then there's three in the other two districts. And they'll make a decision. And if a person, the litigants, disagree with the court of appeals decision, they can appeal further to the Supreme Court, which may or may not take the appeal.
So when the appeal is actually heard, is it heard by the three judges or just an individual judge?
It's the three judges make a decision. It's got to be a majority decision. There's a lot of reading and writing. I'll say there are a few exceptions, but it's a lot of reading and writing. So there's occasionally oral arguments, but there's not a second trial. It's on the papers and it's on the evidence and everything that was collected in the lower court.
You know, so you've decided to throw your hat in the ring, and one of the reasons why, you know, and I got to tell you, over the years, I've had a lot of judges on my shows, including four of them or more that are on the state Supreme Court. And I don't know if I've ever had one running for the Court of Appeals. And I'm saying that to say this. We don't know much about what happens.
We don't.
The courts of appeals.
That's true. But the Court of Appeals resolves almost 95% of the appeals out there. So it is. It does become important. The Court of Appeals issues some written decisions that become precedent then that are followed by other courts in the state until and unless the Supreme Court issues a different decision.
And so the reason I'm asking those questions is because when people go to vote and they see Court of Appeals, it's like, well, who you know. And so I think it's important that people understand, right?
Absolutely.
How critically important that position is and why they need to know who they're voting for and why.
Absolutely, and it really does fly under the radar often. It's not the place where most attention is directed, but it can have an impact, and it is important to me personally to make sure that every litigant's rights are honored.
So those seats are 6 years?
6 year terms, yes.
Wow, so that's why it's really critically important that somebody gets to sit there. Once they get there, they're almost there until death. I mean, come on, you know, because people don't know unless they're ready to step aside.
Right.
It's hard to make a case against someone unless you have a platform, right?
Right,
I mean,
absolutely.
In order to do it, right? I mean, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of debates that they've set up anywhere between you and...
There may be one, but right. There were and a couple other groups tried to get debates together, but they didn't, or forums put together, but they didn't happen.
Yeah. So April...
April 4th.
April 4th. How long you been campaigning?
We started in November, early December. I've been talking about it on and off for the last, since summer.
See, that's the point I'm making. You've been doing this, and that's because people's focus has been on the state Supreme Court.
Right.
And you know, and prior to that, it was on the gubernatorial race. And the
that's
Senate
why we
race.
Waited till November to drop
it. Right. I mean, you understand that.
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
You know, you've got to try to carve out.
Well, the Supreme Court race is so important, and it's going to generate so much interest and activity in our state. And we know it's important.
Right. But
it is hard to overcome that. It is hard to also, I don't mean to say overcome, but it's hard to also get my, you know, foot in the door, get my word in edgewise. And I usually don't have a problem talking. But yeah. But now people are starting to look at it, and we are really looking to spread the word because this race is important too.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, Jess, didn't know you prior to today, but just I can feel some energy in you. And I don't know the other person. But Scott Walker selected that person, and that's enough for me to know that you're going to get my support.
Well, I appreciate that very much.
And we'll bring you on again. Because that's what the other side does.
Right.
Right? I mean, people wonder, and they say, well, the other side pushes, and they want to make sure that they stay in charge and in control of things. And so they set up mechanisms that they can get the voices of the people who they support on the airwaves. And so I'm extending that invitation to you.
Well, I appreciate
we'll
that.
We'll have you on again and again and again. We need to see changes. People have been in positions too long, and conservatives have controlled things too long in our state. And it's time to balance the scales of justice, right? I mean, that's what they say anyway.
Absolutely.
We want to make sure that happens.
Absolutely.
We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. My guest is Sarah...
Geenan.
All right. We'll be right back. Thank you. also, I had this Gladys Knight thing is today, so I'm kind of doing all Gladys Knight songs. But anyway, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is, well, I was going to call you Judge already, Sarah
Geenan.
Geenan. So it's not, your name is pronounced differently than it's spelled, right?
It's rarely spelled correctly. It's usually Green,
right,
or Geenan,
right,
or,
right,
you know, there's usually extra letters thrown in there, but it's Geenan.
But she's a candidate for the Court of Appeals in District 1. And I think, you know, I would be remiss if we didn't give you an opportunity to talk about why and why you're running and what you see as the direction that the courts need to go.
I'm running because I think it's critically important that our courts reflect, that our bench, the judiciary, reflects our values, that it shares our values. And those values are justice and democracy for all. I think in many ways it's that simple. It's making sure that you and I and everybody else has a voice and can exercise that voice, and that their rights are the same no matter what. That my rights are the same as your rights are the same as, you know, everybody's rights up in Superior and Kenosha and Dane County and Rhinelander.
You know, we are at a point right now where all those things are in question. I mean, they surely are in question, depending on who you are, what color your skin is, how much money you have, you know, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. All those things are, to me, what's at stake. And none of those things should matter.
That is
correct. But they do.
None of those things should matter. You know, our laws were written on the books so that, you know, they were intended to increase fairness, to check the power imbalances in our society for the purpose of making sure that our rights are equal, as a purpose of checking democracy and keeping democracy stable so that we each have a say, the same say, no matter who we are, where we are.
You know, when you talk about the founding fathers, and you can't beat people talking about the founding fathers, it's easy to talk about them. It's another thing altogether to work towards trying to live what their vision was. And the reason that they've separated those three different parts of government, they knew.
They knew it was easy for one part to, you know, one branch to get a little, shall we say, overexcited.
Yeah, and full of themselves.
Full of themselves. Absolutely. So that's why we created a system that checks, that has inherent checks. One branch checks the other, checks the other.
You know, and all of us, I don't care whether it's something with a corporation that has lost their way. We now live in a time and in a society where corporations can poison the people and create harm to the citizens. And we have some judges who overlook that. And because their finances, they get caught up and involved in our justice system, which should never possibly even happen. But money.
Money. You know, this goes back to the Citizens United decision from the United States Supreme Court. And I think that's in many ways where things kind of went off the rails.
Right.
But the long and short of it is that our courts, and even the Court of Appeals, plays a role in upholding democracy, plays a role in upholding justice and ensuring justice for all. And because we've seen money, we've seen those corporate interests creeping into, we saw it in our legislature.
Right.
We saw it creeping into our courts with these decisions that don't reflect the realities of the world that we live in. They just simply don't. And we've need to take that back. We need to stop that.
So how do we get it back on the rails? Well, we began by electing people who understand the value of what the courts are supposed to be, right? I mean, you can't be an attorney. Oh, well, I can't say you can't. But attorneys and what you swear to and what your beliefs are when you first get into that profession, it's justice.
Right. I think people go to law school with different for different reasons. I went because, in part, I grew up with my dad telling me I was going to either be a teacher or a labor lawyer. But I went because I did believe in justice. I believed in making a difference and doing good, helping people. And that's why I did it. I know other people had different reasons, but coming from a blue-collar background, law school was a whole different ballgame, too. But that is why many of us get into it, and that's why I'm taking this step today. And we start by making that difference on the judiciary by electing me on April 4th. And you know, making sure we spread our message and we get back to these foundational basics. You know, everybody matters. We need to take things seriously, no matter who the litigants are. And we need to consider what we do and don't know.
You know, just the thought of things being just. And I still, for the life of me, don't understand why we can't make things just. It's not asking too much, right?
It should have
been. I mean, can you imagine what kind of world it would be if justice, as Reverend Dr. King said, rolled down like a mighty river? You know, we could change the world. And that is possible. It may not happen in my lifetime, but you got young sons.
I have young sons.
And so you have to battle, right?
I have to battle. I've got young sons. They've got friends who don't look like them.
Right.
And, you know, I worry about the kind of opportunities that all of our kids are going to have. My kids, your kids, your grandkids. And we need to do better by them.
I keep telling people the fight is not for my generation. My generation, we've had our time. But anybody from my generation who sees what is happening now and is not willing to fight to change it, again, not for us, but for those who come after us. And that's why it's so important that people hear your message and then vote for you, because it's going to take at every level to change all of it. It starts first step.
It does.
All right. Thank you for coming in.
And thank you for having
I'm excited about you and your prospects, and we're going to bring you in again and again and again and do what we can hopefully to put you in a position to make a difference. All right.
Thank you so much.
We've got to go to a break. Thank you. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.